I wonder if you've ever thought about Australia as a place shaped by the sea. So come with me to the wharves at Darling Harbour in Sydney.
Hello, I'm Alex Gaffakin and I'm Head of Interpretation and Design here at the Australian National Maritime Museum.
Just looking around, we can see some amazing things. I walked past a huge submarine, I think, to get here, and some tall ships. Can you tell me about the ones just nearby us here on the wharf?
So we're standing in front of Wharf 7, which is part of what used to be a very industrial part of Sydney. And from where we're standing, what we can see over there in the distance is our replica of the Endeavour, which was the ship that Captain Cook sailed in. To my left here is James Craig. That's another tall ship, which is run by Sydney Heritage Fleet. And then round the corner, you've got HMAS Vampire, which is a destroyer, and the submarine HMAS Onslow.
And we can also see, you know, the rippling water of Cockle Bay, all the skyscrapers, the seagulls, a few tourists braving the heat. It's a very warm day, autumn day. So why don't we go for a walk and have a think about the spirituality of the sea? Alex, can you give us a sense of how important seafaring has been in Australian culture and history? We often think of ourselves as landlubbers, I suppose, but is it a big part of the Australian story?
Well, we think so. In fact, we have a phrase that Australia was shaped by the sea. So that's geologically in terms of sort of the oceans forming Australia, but then also over the tens of thousands of years of human occupation, both humans working with the ocean then, you know, the sea levels rising and falling. And then more recently, for example, the ocean has been, or the seas have been the reason why so many people have been able to migrate over here by boats over hundreds of years. And then we also have, for example, the Royal Australian Navy who work in peace and defending Australia. And then, of course, there's the vast amounts of trade that comes to Australia by ships, by boats. So really, I think, yeah, Australia has been shaped by the sea.
But what about spirituality? What kind of religious ideas or meanings have been associated with the sea?
Well, since I've come to work here at the Australian National Maritime Museum, we've had a whole range of different sort of exhibitions or experiences that have a link to spirituality. I mean, more than I've ever had working in any other museum, actually. It's actually quite interesting. For example, every time we open an exhibition, we have an acknowledgement to country or a welcome to country. And of course, the key thing there is that for Aboriginal people, it's not just the land, it's the water and seas that they are custodians of as well. And they have a real spiritual connection. And we do exhibitions sometimes on that spiritual connection. For example, we had an exhibition, Gapu Monarch, which was about the connection of the Yolngu people to their land and specifically to their waters and the protection that they wanted for their water. We had a fabulous thing in 2014 where some Varkas from various South Sea Island communities came to Australia and to other places, really to highlight, I suppose, the impact of climate change. But the whole of the front of the wharf where we're sitting now was full of South Sea Island communities singing and singing hymns, singing welcoming songs, you know, to greet the people as they were coming on the Varkas, on these big, you know, sailing ships arriving in the harbour. And again, we asked a local Gadigal elder to come, and he went out in his canoe to welcome them in. There was a lot of ceremony in process.
The British colonists who arrived in the late 18th century, what was their thought about the sea, or how did they understand the sea in religious terms?
Well, in fact, this is actually a good point to bring up the story of the mission to seafarers. So back in the 1820s, certainly I don't know how much connection the sailors had in a spiritual sense to the sea, but certainly when they turned up in Sydney, the first thing they looked for was the pubs. So they're really, the spiritual aspects were sort of lacking, and that's really what inspired the mission to seafarers. In 1822, the rector of St Philip's Church of England, the Reverend William Cowper, he instigated the first establishment of a society really to look after the welfare of the sailors who were turning up. And the mission to seafarers is still going today. And that's because I think for sailors, they're spending a lot of time isolated, away from their families, away from their support, their communities, their churches, their mosques. And so, for example, the mission to seafarers has a very strong Christian ethos to help those people, both in terms of their religious life, but also their pastoral care.
Sitting here looking at the replica of the Endeavour, I'm struck by what a small ship it is. You can imagine I mean, the fear of the deep, perhaps, during a storm. I mean, it's the size of a Sydney ferry, the one that just pulled away from the wharf behind us. I read somewhere that the prayer book, the Anglican prayer book that the colonists brought with them, had in it several prayers, actually, for seafarers, for people who were fighting at sea in the Navy or in the midst of a storm, their life was under threat.
I mean, it was obviously a very dangerous profession. So praying, you know, is one way to have, I suppose, a sense of feeling that there is hope, that there is somebody looking after you, that you're not alone out in the ocean. I myself have an experience, Meredith. Before I came to work in museums, I worked for the British Antarctic Survey, and I actually spent about 6 weeks travelling by boat down to Antarctica. And then I lived there for 2 years in a remote research station.
Wow.
And out there, you are a long way from support systems. A long way. Our nearest church, for example, was in South Georgia, which was about 1,000 kilometres away. And it's very hard. And I found at first, for example, you know, I went down really with my Christian ethos of trying to put the Gospels into practice, to love my neighbour as myself. But, you know, you are very isolated. It's a very harsh thing. And for a while there, I thought, you know, is there a God? Is there, you know, what's going on? Where is my faith? But then after a very dark moment, I guess, I came out of that and realised and just felt the love of God in a way that I hadn't felt before. And that experience I've read about from other people as well, who've been down to that isolation, that moment of sort of thinking you're very alone and then suddenly feeling overwhelmed by love. And a lot of people have rediscovered their faith, found their faith through difficult times, through the isolation, both, you know, going down to Antarctica or being away at sea for months on end, you know. So I was living down there with 16 other people. A very small community. And as you can imagine, you know, small communities could fracture, they could be difficult, you know, you could have rows, there could be, you know, niche groups forming. But I went down really there, you know, thinking of putting the Gospels into practice, to love my enemies, to love my neighbours, myself, to be the first to love. And these really inspired me to try and build unity, build relationships, and you know, live the words of Jesus down there with my friends. And I think it made a real difference to the community down there. You know, when people gossiped, for example, I'd say, no, don't want to hear that. You know, or for example, helping people just to clean up after dinner, very small acts like this, you know, that they're like a stone dropping into the water and those ripples spread and gradually people, you know, behave more neighbourly to each other and love each other more, I think. So it was a very strong experience for me and really showed me the power of living the Gospels and putting those into practice.
And perhaps that's what the chaplains involved with the mission to seafarers were hoping their lives might achieve as well. Well, Alex, the museum has quite a lot of material related to the mission to the seafarers and the effort, if you like, to cultivate a spiritual life among seafaring people in Australian history. Can you tell me about some of your prize objects? What have you got that you think really reflects this story of spirituality and the sea?
Yeah, so the mission to seafarers, it's got some fabulous stuff in it. For example, at the moment, one of the things we can look at is a pulpit, but is in the shape of a ship's prow. So it's known as the lifeboat pulpit, and it's a beautiful wooden structure with a cross on the front in the shape of the front of a ship. It actually reminds me quite a lot of some of the pulpits and reading desks in churches in Tonga that I saw in some of the uniting churches out there. Beautifully rendered, this one, and it's a fantastic piece.
It's got a lot of symbolism.
It actually reminds me as well of the... I mean, as the story is obviously from the Gospel, where Jesus was recruiting fishermen to be his disciples. And he obviously spent quite a lot of time in boats. You know, he describes in the Gospels the stories of him going out and calming the seas. And then obviously at one point saying to the fishermen as well, you know, cast your nets on the other side, give it another go. And they trusted him. They, you know, hauled in a huge catch. So there's a lot of parallels, I think, or a lot of stories between, you know, the Gospels, between what Jesus was saying, stories in the Old Testament, and boats and shipping and fishermen as well. A lot of our collections are quite secular, but occasionally we do have some actually quite religious items. And the one that I've got in front of me here is a pocket Bible. So it's the Holy Bible, Old and New Testaments, and it's from 1844, which was actually when the Sydney Bethel Union founded the Mariners Church. It's a beautiful little red velvet Bible. It's got a beautiful brass clasp held together. And there's an inscription that says, to see Nicole from her brother Andrew. quite what the story is, we don't know at the moment. Was it from a sailor, to his family back at home, to a loved one? We don't know. But it's a beautiful item that is now in the collections of the Maritime Museum.
Alex, can I ask how the sea might figure in your personal spirituality?
I was sharing a little bit there about, I suppose, my own reawakening of my spirituality and my my commitment to living out the Gospels in my life when I went down to Antarctica. And one of the things that I'm also a member of a lay movement within the Catholic Church. I'm Anglican, but I'm part of an ecumenical group called the Focolari. And one of the things that that we try to do is every month we take a line from the Gospels and really try to live it and put it into practice. So I actually looked up one of the Word of Life that was related to the sea, and it was from Luke chapter 5, "If you say so, I will let out the nets." And again, this was the story of Jesus and the fishermen in Simon's boat. And they hadn't caught anything, and Jesus then says, "Okay, well, try again, let out your nets again." And I think, for example, the meditation itself says, by having faith in Jesus, by having faith in the Word, if you trust, or if you try to love, if you put yourself out there, if you're the first to really give it a go, that you will receive the hundredfold. So I suppose I find that, for example, particularly those stories from the Bible really inspire me in my life to put them into practice. And I think I love the phrase, it's from a song, isn't it? "I will make you fishers of men if you follow me." And I think that's a beautiful phrase. If you follow Jesus, you can spread Jesus' message of love and unity and compassion.
I read somewhere, Alex, that you play in a pirate band, which sounds really fun. Do you sing pirate music, sea shanties, or the music of the sea?
Yeah, so we're called the Mutineers, and we like to think of ourselves as Sydney's premier pirate band, possibly Sydney's only pirate band, but there we go. Yeah, so we started a few years ago. We first started just collecting songs that we were interested in playing, and we found ourselves, for various reasons, because we had a violinist and a banjo player, and we started singing more and more songs that were to do with sort of folk songs, but particularly shanties. And there's a whole range of sea shanties. A lot of them are working songs, and it's quite interesting, actually, because we looked up the history of a lot of working songs and shanties, and they're actually quite a new thing. They're mainly from the 19th century, I guess, particularly with sailing ships. And the history of shanties could well be that a lot of them were based on work songs sung by African-American slaves in the Americas, they themselves having a rich tradition of faith and song singing that came out in the works that they were doing as enslaved peoples out there in the plantations. So those songs transferred to the ships, they got sung by sailors, they were often used when they were hauling things up. And there's a whole range of different songs about love, loss, about enemies, about, there's a lot of obviously English ones, I'm English, about Napoleon. Some fantastic range of songs. And we also sing some folk songs as well, a whole range of things. And it's great fun. As I said, I don't think we're going to make a million out of it, but it's a great tradition to keep going.
Well, lucky you have a job here at the Australian National Maritime Museum as well, Alex. It's been wonderful to speak with you today. Thanks so much for sharing your story on Soul Search.
You're welcome. Thanks, Meredith.